This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. A play called The Talk is hoping to inspire more than just talk. It is a one-man interactive play that aims to change minds and inspire action to create a more equitable community. Sonny Kelly is the playwright and the star of this production. He wrote it after he gave his 7-year-old son a version of The Talk. That's the conversation that African-American parents have to have with their children to share guidance on how to act during encounters with the police. Sonny embodies more than 20 different characters in The Talk, including his parents, his sons, and well-known figures like Barack Obama and James Baldwin. Sonny Kelly's an actor, a playwright, and a doctoral candidate at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and joins us now. Welcome to The State of Things.
Hey, glad to finally be here with you, Frank.
It's good to have you, particularly talking about this very difficult conversation that has to happen in African-American communities and perhaps not elsewhere as often. Tell us about The Talk.
Well, you know, I didn't really know what The Talk was until spring of 2015, and I was listening to WUNC, taking my 7-year-old at the time to school in Fayetteville, where I live, and I heard about riots in the streets of Baltimore, Maryland. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. The source of all of this was a black man named Freddie Gray. And when I looked into my rearview mirror, I saw a little black boy, as beautiful as he is and as wonderful as he is, who is going to grow up to be a black man. A black man who would look an awful lot like the pictures I had seen on CNN of Freddie Gray. And it just hit me in that moment. I did not have to prepare or to figure it out. I gave him a talk right then about survival, about the fact that some people will judge him because of the color of his skin. So he's got to rise above that and always be better and always be on guard. And it wasn't until a week later, Frank, I was walking in downtown Fayetteville and I just started weeping out of nowhere. And I realized then that some traumatic experience had happened to me. You know, you have a death in the family or some trauma. Sometimes trauma can be like a specter. It'll sneak up on you. And it snuck up on me, and I was weeping uncontrollably. And as an artist and a scholar, I just thought to digest it. So I grabbed my phone. I started typing it out. And that was the beginnings of what is now known as The Talk, the performative experience that we see today.
The theatrical rendering is the fullness of that expression, to be sure. But give us the narrow intellectual part, to the extent that you could understand that. Mm. Where do those tears come from? What is the trauma of realizing that is a talk that you have to give?
Well, I think when you have that kind of talk and you realize there was no preparation for me, that means there was there's something in my DNA or something that's been placed in me from a young age to be able to just perform this talk with my son without any preparation. And so I looked back and I thought about what my parents had said to me. And I remember my father, when I was 16 years old, teaching me about the power of what we call the 2 and the 10, or the 2 o'clock and the 10 o'clock, putting your hands on the wheel. My father taught high school driver's ed. But when he taught me, the 2 and the 10 was a lesson in the business of survival while the vehicle was stopped. And that came across in his tone. He didn't say anything about being black, but that was about a year after the riots in Los Angeles, and Rodney King had been beaten, pulled over by police officers, and my father gave me that talk in a very grave way. And so I started looking at the fact that these talks have been happening really for centuries. And then I started doing research. I looked and I found that Ta-Nehisi Coates, of course, wrote the Between the World and Me. And I started looking at critical race theory and looking at the fact that James Baldwin wrote a letter to his nephew back in 1962. And looking online and talking to other parents and realizing this is a thing. We don't talk about it. We just do it. Right. And so as I did that, this thing went from a daddy loving his son. I had an 8-minute story I called Sterling Story. And it's just about me loving my son and having to have that talk with him. And then I met Joseph Meagle at UNC Chapel Hill and tied all of these touch points together, kind of like in the African storytelling tradition. We talk about Anansi, you know, the wise spider who weaves these webs. And I started weaving this web and seeing, wow, there are so many connections to who I am, to who my son is, who we think we are, and how we have to navigate this very precarious existence of what it is to be a black male in the Western world.
Can you give us a sample?
Sure. This is a piece by one of my favorite writers and poets of all time, Howard Elcraft, and it's called Grandma's Letter to Peanut During His Freshman Year. I was bragging on you to Mrs. Johnson Sunday. My rusty butt grandson is a freshman in college. I remember when you was playing with Power Rangers. Now look at you, all grown up and smart and handsome. Still, there's some things I want you to keep in mind. I ain't worried about you studying. You always made A's, and your mama and your daddy don't talk to you about drinking and them fast tail gals. So I ain't much concerned about that neither.
Just remember, that college you go to is mostly white, and you gonna have plenty of white friends, but the world y'all share ain't the same. When you get stopped by the police, you put your hands on the wheel. Look straight ahead. Don't make no quick movements. Say yes, sir, and no, sir, and don't ask no questions. Just take the ticket, and we'll deal with it later. And if the lights ever come on behind you at night, you don't stop until you in a public place. Now, I know you done heard this 100 times, but the time you don't heed it, we'll be headed to Greer's funeral home to make arrangements. And my heart couldn't take that, baby.
Actor and playwright Sonny Kelly performing a scene from his one-man show, The Talk. The production is at Durham Fruit and Produce Company until February 10th and at UNC's Historic Playmakers Theater in Chapel Hill from the 14th until the 17th. And, of course, we have that at our website, stateofthings.org. One of many renditions of this particular talk. Talk about the way in which you brought all of these threads together and all of the characters together It's a single talk. But talk about the various perspectives and how you approached it.
I think it's really interesting. When you start working on a project, all of a sudden you see the world through that lens, right? People say, you know, if you're a hammer, everything becomes a nail, right? So I just started seeing The Talk in all these different things. So as I was writing The Talk and developing it, I got to sit down and look at some of Howard L. Kraft's work, and he has this beautiful love for his grandmother, and so do I. And I thought about how grandmothers have a certain way of bringing truth to you and protection. And so that connected to me. But in the midst of all of this, I found myself in my own head. And so what The Talk is, it's really a chance for the audience to get into my head and to see everything from W.E.B. Du Bois's talk about double consciousness, an American, a Negro, two souls, two thoughts, two unreconciled strivings, two warring ideals in one dark body. What does that mean to me, to be conflicted like that, to love my country and to be afraid of some of my countrymen? Because of the history of racism and the fact that it exists today. And so tying in the writings and thoughts of James Baldwin, Langston Hughes has this wonderful poem, Let America Be America Again. And it really is encouraging because it's triumphant and it's a call to action, but it's also a bit concerning and I'll say discouraging or demoralizing because he wrote this back in the 60s and we still have these same needs, right? So I tied all that in and I thought, well, look, I want to be an artist, I want to be an activist, and I'm analytical. I'm a scholar. How do I do all of this? And so in The Talk, I jump into my head, and then I find this professor character. He's kind of an alter ego, so to speak. I kind of fashion him after the professor that I want to be, but he's kind of a Cornel West guy. Just got away with words, smooth, man, and so smart. Like, you're like, okay, I may disagree with him, but that dude's smart, you know? Yeah. And then I bring in my mom and my grandmother, and I bring in these scholars, and it's a term paper, Frank. Yeah. It's a term paper. I was going to tell you, I've actually cited you in some of the papers I've written because you've done some great work about the school-to-prison pipeline, and that's really my focus in my research. My dissertation is Pipelines to Pathways, Performatively Reframing and Reclaiming Black Youth Identity. So I've actually cited some of the work that you've done here on the state of things. So thank you for being part of my scholarship.
Well, we do what we can with what we're given. But, you know, when you think about, again, the ways in which only art can render this kind of thing, and your, I think, eloquent look at and thoughts about how this is an intellectual problem, one that could be understood and explained intellectually. But until we hear Grandma, we don't quite understand it because she's fierce. She's absolutely fierce. Yeah. She is determined, right? And she is a little bit enraged. Mm. And so you can hear the power in her voice. And also, to some degree, and this has to be said, and here's what drives me to tears when I think about this, humiliated. To have to give this kind of a talk, to say surrender, because you have to surrender in a way that a white boy doesn't have to surrender, grandson. This drives me to tears, but that can only be rendered, it seems to me, theatrically, in the voice of one particular human being and not in the writings of Cornel West in some ways.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the performative space can be what Augusto Boal calls a space for revolution. It's where we can begin to imagine the what if. And it's safe because I'm a character, or am I? You know, yeah. I'm dad, and then I'm my son Sterling, and then I'm my dad. I'm all these things at once. And so because we're playing with the edges of reality and we're suspending our disbelief and we're laughing and we're crying, we all kind of emotionally, as we say in the church talk, we break up the fallowed ground, right? So seed can be planted. And it's this wonderful celebration of the art. I mean, it's excellent theater. I'll tell you that. But on top of that, it's me, it's kind of therapeutic. It's me kind of pressing into this very anxiety-ridden experience and trying to make sense of it with the audience. So it's dialogic in that sense.
Talk about that. Talk more about the talkbacks and the conversations you have with the audience.
Thank you. Yeah, every show is different because there's a lot of dialogue between me and the audience. Oftentimes, it's just nonverbal. It's just me looking at them to think, are you tracking with me? But then there are times when I ask a question like, can we talk? And I'm waiting for the audience to answer. And if they don't say yes, we can't talk. Show's over, y'all. So they have some agency in that, right? I think that's another powerful thing that performance does, is it gives us an agency, a level of agency in this imaginary world that we might not normally have. But then afterward, there's always a talk back. The show runs about 70 to 75 minutes, and then we have a talk back for about 35 to 45 minutes afterward. And that's my requirement as an artist, as a writer, as an activist, is that we sit and we talk about this. Because now that I've put my skin in the game and I've shown you, as I say, my emotional underbelly and my love for my child and my concern and my anxiety and the fact that I don't have the right answers, I want to ask you all to sit down with me and be just as vulnerable so we can try to figure out some things together. And so every show has a talk back. So it's a 2-hour experience, essentially. You come at 8, you'll be out by 10, and hopefully you'll keep on talking all the way to the car and beyond.
Can you run another scene for us?
Yeah, yeah. This is a scene I call Needle Nazis. So I think about what happened in Charlottesville. And as a scholar, I look at that and I say, that was an act of terrorism. As a father, I think about the fact that I felt the terror of Charlottesville in my own home before the first rock was thrown or a bat was swung. We sat and watched the news, and I saw what appeared to be an army of angry white people marching at night with torches, shouting slogans of white supremacy, anti-immigration, and anti-Semitism, and saw what my ancestors and many of my elders would have looked on in terror and called a lynch mob. My two little boys saw this.
Daddy, what are needle Nazis? Langston, it's neo-Nazis, not needle Nazis. Sterling, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to Daddy. Boys, please.
Langston, he's right, okay? It's neo-Nazis.
Daddy, it's needle Nazis because they put needles in guns and they shoot them and hurt people.
Nice try, Langston. No, it's neo-Nazi, okay? Neo means new. And, okay, the Nazis were these bad guys back in World War II, and they killed millions of Jewish people and other people.
Oh, Daddy, so the neo-Nazis are the new Nazis. Like they're back, right?
Yeah, Sterl. Like they're back.
Who's back? Langston, the neo-Nazis. Daddy, they're like the KKK, right? They hate anybody who's not white?
Yeah, Sterl, pretty much.
Daddy, do they hate me?
No, Langston, they don't even know you.
But Daddy, yes, son.
Are the neo-Nazis gonna get me?
No. Of course not.
The truth is that the boogeyman is real. Not just a figment of our imaginations or a toothless reenactment of a time long gone, but an army of strong, focused, violent, intelligent human beings who are bent on the extermination or domination of people who don't look like them. So, you tell me, what does a daddy say to his baby boy when the boogeyman is real?
Sonny Kelly performing a scene from his one-man show, The Talk. You can see a production at Durham Fruit and Produce Company until February 10th. Or at UNC's Playmakers Theater in Chapel Hill, the 14th through the 17th. Of course, we've got the information at our website, stateofthings.org. And we're talking about that today with Sonny Kelly on The State of Things. Talk about the role of your own family, because I understand that your family history, in a way, plays an important part in this.
Very much so. I mean, I come from a family of what I call hustlers, right? My father's father did some time in prison when he was younger, and he was raised by his mother and his grandfather for many of those years. But then when his father got out of prison, he got a job to make it up to my grandmother. That's how, like, it was all forgotten. We literally did not talk about him being in prison until I was an adult, because we knew he was a working man. That's what meant something. So my father's been shining shoes in South Texas since he was 9. Helping to make ends meet in the family. My mother, on the other hand, grew up in a relatively integrated California, Los Angeles area. But she's very light-skinned, and she passes for white, not intentionally. She grew up in a black community, was always a very proud black woman. She spoke with the deep, soulful undertones I was used to hearing from black women. She shown up whooped my tail like a black woman. But she was always called that white girl over there. So she was an outsider on the inside of a group that's normally outsiders. So you want to talk about that liminal space, that in between, that hybridity that is so powerful. That's what she lived. And I honestly had interviewed my dad thinking, well, hey, Pop, you grew up in the segregated South. You know what it's like to deal with racism in its overt and covert manifestations. And I kind of in passing just said, hey, Mom, what do you think about this? And it was such a rich and deep oral history that she gave me about what it's like to be the other within a group of the other. So I learned from my mother to celebrate my grandmother's beautiful blue eyes and to acknowledge the fact that my high yellow mother saw me as a brown baby messiah. The poetry comes out from my conversations with them. So my mother grew up always wanting to prove her blackness. And I was her first child. It was her third child, but I was the first one that had brown skin. And so she called me her brown bomber. And I grew up being the favorite child because I was the darker child. So again, American history and white supremacy on its head, right? In this particular microcosm. So what I love about the story is I just show the fact that like we're all over the place, you know, Americans and the systems that we use to categorize and label each other are neurotic and sick and perverse, but we still use them. So racism may be a social construct, but it's a social construct with teeth.
And it's one that not only is there a double consciousness in for African-American communities, but if you think about the way whites have somehow complied and not asked enough questions about it, when it's so apparent. So which brings me to actually the conversations you have in these talkbacks. Yeah. What are you hearing? What kinds of conversations?
You know, I'm really glad that you said that, because what I find is that folks who are in the white community oftentimes will say, wow, my heart is broken. I did not know this existed. But I don't feel like you're calling me out. You're calling me in. Let's talk. I love it. They're open. And then folks who are in more marginalized communities or communities of color say, thanks for hearing me. Thanks for affirming and speaking the truth to my lived experience. And so I'll say the greatest compliment someone paid me was, it was a white man. He stood up. He said, I want to thank you for your story. And thank you for calling me in and not calling me out. So the goal is to move toward critical action after we've had these critical conversations, not pointing fingers, but pointing the way to a better way.
Sonny Kelly, playwright, actor, star of The Talk, also a doctoral candidate at UNC Chapel Hill. Thank you so much, Sonny, for talking with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. I'll be back.
I certainly hope so. You can see a production at Durham Fruit and Produce Company until February 10th. UNC's Playmakers Theater in Chapel Hill from the 14th to the 17th. We have all the information on The Talk at our website, stateofthings.org. And you can also sign up for our newsletter to get a daily preview of the lineup. So do that as well. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.